Are you thinking about getting a new car? Redwood Credit Union offers affordable auto loans for new and used vehicles. You can even refinance an existing loan with us. Our quick loan process will get you in a car you love. The road to your next ride starts at Redwood Credit Union. Easily apply online at redwoodcu.org/auto or ask for RCU financing at your dealership. Redwood Credit Union, for all that you love.
Time for our bi-weekly conversation with Farhan Zaidi. Farhan, how are you?
Hey, doing well. Thanks, guys.
Good, good. Yeah. So I got to ask you, since you guys just got done playing in Colorado, it was funny because we used to talk to Brian Sabian weekly years ago, and he said, no, I do not go to Colorado. I don't want to watch games in Colorado. I went one time, and that was good enough for me. He called it beer league softball. It's not quite beer league softball anymore, although game two of the series had a definite old school Coors feel tilt to it. So how are you about going to Colorado and watching games that are played in Coors Field?
I'm about 50-50 making the trip and not. I mean, it's not too tough of a trip, and, you know, occasionally like to be on the road with a team, but if you can find a good excuse not to, yeah, it's a lot. You know, like we've talked about, those are games that it's almost preferable to be watching on your couch with your arms folded, getting, you know, in the position to be ready to get grumpy when things start going sideways, as they often do there. So yeah, I was on my couch for this series, and it was a good thing because there are some twists and turns. But yeah, you know, anytime you go in there and take two out of three, that's a pretty good outcome.
Absolutely. Now, we've seen it, and I know there are stories, and I don't think they portray him particularly favorably, but Jerry West in the new series Winning Time, he'd always watch from the tunnel, and it was hard for him to watch games. I've read a story about Billy Bean driving around watching, listening to games from Treasure Island. How are you when you're watching the game? Do you get up and pace at all? Are you able to sit there and watch the game? Because I got to imagine for someone in your shoes, you know, West being the front office types, You can't do anything at that point. And you're just watching the game like we're watching. You watch it differently than we watch it. But at that point, there's nothing you can do to affect the outcome of that single game. Is that easy for you? Well, easy is not the right word because I know it's not easy. But can you sit still and watch it? Do you pace it all? Do you say, okay, this spot isn't lucky. I got to go. I got to switch chairs. This isn't working.
Yeah, I'm usually pretty well behaved for like the first seven innings or so. You know, if I'm at home, I'm kind of watching. Then I'm messing around with our son, and, you know, trying to help out. And then by the eighth or ninth inning, yeah, I'm probably just like any front office person out there in any sport. You know, you know, the one bizarre habit I have is, you know, rather than pacing, like when things get really tight, I just start like gravitating towards the TV like an insect towards light. And so like we got a big screen TV and I'm like, you know, like 18 inches away from the screen or something. So that's my strange habit. But, you know, I try to stay back and stay calm as long as I can.
Yeah, I was going to say, Adam, you could do what I used to do that'll really make it much worse for you. I don't do it as much anymore. But whenever it got to a critical point in the game, and it was a game that I was interested in for one reason or another, I would slow-mo it. So I would actually slow, like when a pitcher released the ball, I would slow-mo it. So it would come into the hitter like slow-mo. So then you have the anxiety of, oh, that's going to catch too much of the strike zone. Then the bat come through the zone. You're like, oh, it looks like it might be a little too low. Oh, it's foul ball. Oh, thank goodness. And I would do that for an entire inning.
Yeah, I mean, I will say this is going to sound so bizarre, but I think you guys will relate. I actually, maybe 5-10 years ago, had an epiphany that, you know, the way I'm watching the game or holding my drink or leaning on the couch really has no effect on the outcome of the game. Like, you know, which like butt cheek I have more weight on, like not to transfer it while things are going well. So that's actually made it a lot more tolerable watching games, not to feel like I have to stay in the same position that I'm in. Well, yeah, just like letting go and saying I have no ability to influence the outcome of this game by the position that I'm in. That's relieved a lot of stress.
That's hysterical. The irony of that is fans who do that and believe that's their like contribution to the team is I'm doing my superstitious thing during a game. You actually are involved with whether or not the team is successful. So that would be I'd be taking it one step beyond if you were superstitious.
Yeah, let me put this bulletin out to fans. You can support us in many other ways, but don't get stuck in an uncomfortable position and wind up watching the last six innings that way. Don't hurt yourself.
Good call. Farhan Zaidi with us on the Uma Guest Line. We talk to him every couple of weeks. Let's get into some of the baseball. 3-3 road trip coming home to take on the Padres again, second time this year. I wanted to ask you, actually, sort of on that same thing, when you're watching a game from home, and you see something go down like we saw yesterday where there's pitching decisions that have to be made and you're trying to manage the off day today for bullpen guys. Logan Webb's up against it for his pitch count. Are you ever surprised when you're watching the game about moves that are made and then talk to Gabe about it afterwards?
Generally not. I mean, a game can go in, you know, an infinite amount of directions, and so you're not going to be able to sort of pose hypotheticals and talk through every scenario. Mm-hmm. We just try to make sure that, you know, in whatever conversations we have, we're kind of in agreement on roles and our evaluations of players. And, you know, if you kind of have an agreement in that regard that, you know, like who your leverage relievers are on a certain day based on availability, then you're not going to be surprised. But, you know, you don't want to have conversations like, oh, who are we using in the seventh inning? Who are we using in the eighth inning? It just gets too micro at that point. And so, you know, kind of just to try to have the broader discussions and sort of individual decisions. I mean, even, you know, the decision to send Webby back out and go hitter to hitter. I mean, you understand it. He'd pitched so well. Our bullpen was taxed. Our leverage guys, our top four guys had thrown back-to-back days, was trying to avoid that. And look, Connor Joe comes off the bench and I think it was first pitch. He lines a single to right field and give the Rockies credit. The top of their lineup is set up where they've got Blackman, then they've got a couple tough right-handed hitters. Then they've got McMahon coming up. So they kind of have a nice left-right mix where, you know, it's kind of pick your poison. Do you go with Alvarez, who's done a great job for us, and, you know, and you tip your cap to Crone for the big homer yesterday, or do you go to the righty Overa, who's a little less experienced, and the first guy he's got to face is Blackman. So, you know, you understand that those are the kind of 51-49 decisions that a manager has to make at times. And, you know, that inning, the top of the order coming up, it was going to be a gauntlet regardless. So, tough call. And, you know, I like kind of giving Webby a shot to go hitter to hitter and maybe get through another inning, and you just kind of got to tip your cap to the opponent yesterday.
Is there a part of you that when you watch Connor Joe, you're like really happy and you're like, damn it, damn it, damn it. Good job. I'm happy for you. Damn it.
Actually, like, I watch Connor Joe now and all I can think about is what a pain of an opponent he is. I mean, it seems like every one of his at-bats in these last two series of games just have been 8, 9, 10 pitches. And, you know, I'm happy to see him succeed just because I know him a little personally. And obviously, mm-hmm. you know, what he went through the last couple of years, you know, with the cancer situation coming out of that, really happy for him. And you know, I saw some of his comments, which made a lot of sense to me. And I think he feels like he had to go through that to, you know, become a better player. You watch his stance and, you know, he had a exaggerated leg kick when we had him. And I think he learned to quiet that down a little bit with, you know, facing the competition level up at the big league, you know, and just not being able to have such big movements when you're facing such high quality pitching. So give him credit for making those adjustments. But I think it's a compliment. Say he's a real pain to have to face on the other side.
Is there with Joey Bart, are we even on the DEFCON chart yet? I don't know where we're at, if we're on the DEFCON chart, but the strikeouts are pretty alarming, the percentage of strikeouts. Is there something you see that you think obviously could be worked on, but where are you at with this? Because you're going to start getting to the point where it's like, hey, you know, we obviously want to win as many games as possible. This is a very, very competitive NL West. The strikeouts, he's been fine behind the plate. It's just, how do you view it? The strikeouts are mounting, and it just seems like, I don't know if maybe just – you know, sitting down and it gets gathering your thoughts, because a lot of times it's confidence, just having the confidence to know you're going to do well when you go up there. I know as an athlete, when you struggle, that's all you think about. You take it home with you. Yeah. You're in the car with you. You just, you can't let it go. And sometimes you just need to get away from it for a minute. How do you see this self-resolve? Or how can you resolve this? And what does he need to do to kind of get out of that that mode?
Yeah, we've talked about it some. I mean, he's a power hitter. Strikeouts are always going to be part of his game. You know, big league pitching, you know, at the level it's at now. You know, our hope is he plays good defense, you know, runs into a few balls, takes some walks. And we understand the strikeouts are going to be part of the game. You know, what you don't want is a situation where things compound themselves. I mean, if you're a guy who has his offensive profile, you're going to have stretches where the strikeouts are maybe a little bit higher than normal. Maybe you don't run into that, you know, one or two balls a week that you hit really hard, either over the fence or in the gap. And, you know, then it starts feeling like a slump. And then are you making adjustments? Then are you taking too many pitches you can drive? You just don't want that snowball, because I think when you, you know, are going through a tough stretch, as hard as it is, and Tom, you kind of speak to the mental side of this, which I think is the biggest aspect. The toughest thing to do is just keep going, you know, and not kind of overcompensate in ways. So I think for us, that's the big key for him, to just kind of continue to work through this. And we talked coming into the season, we've got two catchers we really like, and Kurt's playing a little bit more now. And, you know, I think that the, you know, people sort of asked us about the timeshare between Kurt and Joey, and our thought process is always like, it's kind of going to ebb and flow, you know, and Cap's going to ride the hot hand and Kurt's swing the bat really well right now. And I'm sure Joey will have stretches like that too. So as much as anything, we just want him to kind of keep grinding. And I think we all appreciate the fact that he's doing other things to help the team win right now.
Yeah. It's probably important to recognize too, that it's like 40 games into the season too, right? Like it's still very early, not even a third of the way through the 2022 campaign. I want to ask you about this just because it's a rumor that came out. I saw it yesterday. It's been out there today. Potentially Juan Soto landing on the trade or on the trade block, or could be out there as a potential move. He's still under contract for a few years. When you see or you hear a rumor like that or a report like that, because I'm not sure who it's coming from or exactly where it's coming from or if it will actually happen, if you're interested in that player and you go, oh, that would be a nice guy to have on my roster, how do you go about verifying that? What's your next move when you hear stuff like that, if you're intrigued?
Yeah, I mean, we're always having those conversations, and between, you know, myself and Scott Harris, we're kind of touching base with people in other front offices, you know, probably every week, you know, with some degree of regularity where, you know, if somebody's going to put, you know, top five, top 10 player on the trade market, they're not going to be shy about mentioning it. Like, you know, we've got one of the best players in baseball and we may trade him, but we're too shy to, you know, we just feel like it's too forward to mention. I mean, those things will come up. So, you know, you try to get that kind of information from the source, and, you know, and then you can really roll up your sleeves and engage. And look, a lot of times things start off as a rumor and it might not have come from the team itself. Then, you know, it's out there. They start getting calls and they start saying, well, maybe we should consider something here. And that's, you know, not about Juan Soto specifically, but just other situations. So, you know, sometimes the rumor mill is a little bit of a self-fulfilling prophecy, but our job is really to kind of keep our finger on the pulse of what the other 29 teams are doing and just maintain active dialogue so we don't miss any.
So when that stuff comes out, like, because we're saying it could be a rumor and then it actually ends up being true, or it's reported or it's leaked, if a team does want to trade a guy, do they start making calls? Do they call the different organizations and say, yeah, he's out there? Or do they put out a release, to an internal release within GMs? How do you know when a guy is on the block?
Yeah, you know, it's interesting. I think there's a certain tier of player where teams don't necessarily want to put the feelers out, where you're not going to hear directly from another GM saying, hey, we're open to talking about this guy, almost for fear that you may negatively impact that player's, you know, market or how teams are perceiving them. You know, this notion of, oh, you know, there must be a reason why they're willing to talk about this player. And, you know, you wish that people would take it at face value and there wasn't that kind of innuendo, but teams have other ways of doing it. If it's not a GM to GM call, if they have some reason to think that that might set off some alarm bells. You know, they'll have their pro scouts who are at the games mention it to other teams' pro scouts and kind of network that way. You know, I always prefer the direct approach. You know, if a team is open to discussing a player, it's always nice to hear directly, but, you know, that's not always realistic. So you've got to make sure that you're prepared to receive the information from different channels.
Are you thinking about getting a new car? Redwood Credit Union offers affordable auto loans for new and used vehicles. You can even refinance an existing loan with us. Our quick loan process will get you in a car you love. The road to your next ride starts at Redwood Credit Union. Easily apply online at redwoodcu.org/auto or ask for RCU financing at your dealership. Redwood Credit Union, for all that you love.
What are the challenges of making trades in baseball, especially for a top five guy? How do you get the value right? Because in basketball, you're trading NBA player for NBA player, same as in football. But in baseball, it's different because a lot of guys you'll be trading would be prospects, and those become just projections at that point. And I always wondered, because we had this conversation, me and my buddy, a couple years ago. Like, if you were to trade Trout, we're both Angel fans, and the Angels weren't winning at the time. We're like, well, what if you trade Trout? How much could you get back? And could you ever replace a guy like that with numbers? Because that's what you'd end up being. How is that? How difficult is that? Because you're getting one guy. And baseball isn't one guy. You've proven that. It's a lot about the 25, 26, 28, all the way up to 40. How do you look at that going, God, what do we, if it was a top five guy, what's equitable and how much damage could you do to your own team just by adding one guy?
Yeah, it's, you know, it can be difficult to define. And, you know, one thing which you kind of alluded to a little bit is, you know, when a team is in a selling position, you know, sometimes you can get a great deal even just for a guy whose deal is up at the end of the year, a so-called rental. You know, how as a seller do you adjust the price when that player isn't a free agent for another year or two years and suddenly you're talking about, you know, potentially a high-impact player that the acquiring team would have for several years? And, you know, I think we all try to look for comps deals, you know, that have happened in the recent past where a team says, you know, we're open to discussing this guy and we view him as comparable to, you know, this player who was traded last year and this was the return. So we'd be looking for something like that. You know, rather than just, you know, having some philosophical debate on what the right, you know, package should look like, being able to sort of refer back to past deals is a somewhat helpful data point. And then, you know, it kind of becomes market driven. You know, a team might tell you, hey, we're looking for, you know, we would do the deal for these two players, you know, or any, and, you know, two out of this group of five players. And, you know, you might sit and think about it for a while and eventually say, okay, that makes sense. And come back and say, hey, we have more interest now and it's going to be different. And, you know, that can be frustrating, but you know, one of the things we try to remember, which is true in life, no matter what, is, you know, you will get a price for something, you're thinking about it, and you're thinking, ah, maybe this price will come down. And the price can also go up. So sometimes you know, when the price is uncomfortable, you know, it might get even more uncomfortable if you don't kind of push the button.
Does it get to a point where you, oh, I'm sorry, Coach, I just wanted to ask him, does it get to a point where you're like, okay, I mean, is it for specific players? Like, okay, these are the guys we want? Or could you say something like, look, I'll give you three players in three groups, and if you want three guys, you could pick one guy from each of those groups. Does it get to a point where you're like, I'll give you a choice, but you can't have these two guys. They're in one group, but you can have one from this group, one from this group, and one from that group.
Yeah, I mean, you can certainly try, and there are times when we really try to own in on how we value a certain player and try to at least mentally bracket things that way. But, you know, you might call a team and say, hey, here are the three groups. They're like, hey, well, we've got eight other teams interested, so I'll tell you where you can put your groups. So it really – but you're right. I mean, teams, you know, even when – you kind of express interest in a more open-ended way, a lot of times they'll say, look, we need one of these two players and then we need some value behind them, and we've got a couple of different groupings. And then, you know, to your point, you can come back and say, well, look, that guy you mentioned in the second or third grouping, like, we talk about him, but he's got to be sort of further to the front of the deal. So, you know, sometimes there's kind of a willingness on the buyer's part and an interest on the seller's part in a certain prospect. But you're right. Sometimes you got to calibrate, you know, where that guy fits into the deal, and that can be a challenge too.
Couple more minutes with Farhan Zaidi on the UMA guest line. How many trades or how many transactions have you guys made this year with the Mariners? Is it five now? Is that what we're up to? I'm like, no joke. Is it like five?
I don't know. I don't know what the number is, but we it seemed like we made them all in like 18 hours.
Yeah, it was really fast.
That was the most surprising part. Yeah, I know Susan Slusser wrote a piece about it, and I kind of mentioned that we're sort of a combination of amused and embarrassed. And but, you know, I have a really good relationship with Jerry DePoto. I think we like a lot of the same players. And, you know, with COVID and some of the early injuries that are going around the game, there's sort of a lot of movement, you know, on 40-man rosters, and that created some of these situations. But I think I mentioned, you know, when I reached out to him on Stuart Fairchild, who was the last of this run of trades that we made, I started my text with, I know you're going to think I'm pulling your leg, but we actually have interest in this guy. So, you know, I felt like I had to couch it a little bit. But, you know, again, Jerry DePoto is great to deal with. So, you know, these deals have kind of come together pretty quickly and pretty easily.
So we asked Gabe this when we had him on earlier this week. Did you by chance collect baseball cards when you were younger?
Yeah, I did. No, I was a big fan. And actually, what's interesting is, well, I don't know if it's interesting, but my younger brother got really, really sick a few years ago. I spent a lot of time with him, doing much better now. He's 4 years younger than me. And, you know, in really kind of the depth of his illness, we sort of rediscovered the hobby a little bit, because it was like one of the only things he could do was, you know, sit around and kind of flip through cards. And we were getting a little nostalgic about it. You know, at one point he was so weak that, you know, I would have to like open the wrappers of cards and actually pull them out and hand it to him. So, you know, the hobby actually has a really special place in my heart, just not only for going through it as a kid, but even kind of more recently, getting through that period with my younger brother. So I don't know if I just kind of like took your question in a really heavy emotional direction.
No.
But the answer is yeah. I mean, I think it's a lot of fun. I think it's a great aspect of sports and baseball in particular.
No, I did it. I did it with my brother, because my brother is
me too. Same thing.
Yeah, we're the only two in the family, and he's 10 years younger than I am. So that was something that we could do together. Go get baseball cards, go to the shops. I bought, of course, if you wanted a card. But it's funny, because I was going to ask you, like, what are the cards you remember the most? Like Ken Griffey Jr. Upper Deck, the first one.
Oh, yeah. I have a great story about that card, which is, I think this was like 1989, 90. You know, I grew up in the Philippines. My family came over, you know, would come to the States during summer vacations, and we'd go around. And the first time my younger brother and I went to a card show, I think it was in Anaheim. It was like the West Coast, you know, annual convention. It was a big show. It was the first time we'd ever been to a card show. I can't remember what happened, but we got into like a fight. I mean, we're like 12 and 8, you know? And so, you know, the card show's at this massive convention center. We split up. We're like, yeah, well, I'll see you in an hour. And so whatever, we went our separate ways. And then when I finally found my younger brother again, he was like, oh my God, you won't believe this. I spent all my $10 on like three Upper Deck packs. And in the last pack, I got a Ken Griffey Jr. rookie card. And he said he was so shocked when he got it that he like almost passed out. He had to go sit down. He's an 8-year-old kid. And all these people come out, are you okay? Are you okay? What happened? Like, oh my God, I got the Ken Griffey card. So whatever, we got over our big fight over that card, which was nice.
That's great. Yeah, we had the big ones for me were that one, the Mark McGwire Olympic card.
Yep.
That was a big
great
one.
Card.
Yeah, Don Mattingly. I want to say it was 83 or 84, Donruss.
Yep.
That was a big one. And then here's what I decided to do, Farhan. I was like, okay, these cards are great, but I'm going to go ahead and spend like, I think I spent like $50 or $100. I go, I'm going to get like prospect cards and just get like 50 of them or 100 of them and see how that goes. See if I end up maybe catching lightning in a bottle and these cards are worth something. I am the proud owner of 50 Felix Jose rookie cards with the Oakland A's.
Nice.
That one did not work out for me. and then I'm also the proud owner of about 50 or so Andy Benes cards, who had a decent career, but cards are worth nothing. So I was like, I'm going to put these with the Pete Incavillas and the Kevin Seitzers. It's not worth a whole hell of a lot.
Yeah, I didn't get into the bulk investments because I probably would have picked the wrong guys myself. So, I got to say, those 80s Topps designs, I love those. And they're pretty smart with bringing them back and doing some of these retro sets. And it's for suckers like us that grew up in the 80s and just can't get away from those designs. So, yeah, a lot of good stuff from that period.
You know what they're saying, Farhan? They're like, those guys in the 80s, they probably have money now. Let's see if we get some more out of them.
Yeah. The guys that bought all those Felix Jose and Andy Benes cars, we can definitely tell them something else.
Where's that dude? Hey, we always appreciate the time. It's always fun catching up with you. We'll talk to you again in a couple weeks, and be well.
All right. Same to you guys.
Thanks, Farhan.
Thanks, Farhan.
Oh, good stuff, dude. Yeah.
Felix Jose.
That's hilarious, man.
Are you thinking about getting a new car? Redwood Credit Union offers affordable auto loans for new and used vehicles. You can even refinance an existing loan with us. Our quick loan process will get you in a car you love. The road to your next ride starts at Redwood Credit Union. Easily apply online at redwoodcu.org/auto or ask for RCU financing at your dealership. Redwood Credit Union, for all that you love.